Well, I hope you all had a chance to meet someone you might not have met before and share a little bit about one another's lives. I just want to end with this little bit of trivia for Halloween, that in case you're at a party this Halloween and you want to share this bit, or if you happen to be on Jeopardy coming up soon. The composer, the author of the hymn Onward, Christian Soldiers. Have you heard that before? His name was Sabine Baring Gould. He also happened to be Victorian England's number one authority on lycanthropy. Do you know what lycanthropy is? The study of werewolves.
Lycans.
Number one authority. In fact, his book, which was published in 1865, called The Book of Werewolves, is still the number one oft-cited textbook on werewolves in the whole study of lycanthropy. So, there you go. It was worth coming today, huh? Well, if you have your Bible with you, I encourage you to turn it to 1 John, and you better hurry because the passage is really short. And I didn't want to strain Larry too much this morning. But before we hear that read to us this morning, I wanted to give you a little background on this. It's from a book that in its entirety are called the Johannine Epistles. That's the fancy seminary word. Basically means it's letters from John. They're Dear John letters or whatever. But Johannine Epistles. And the tradition calls this author John, 1 John, 2 John, 3 John. But if you look at, I think a lot of people think that, and a lot of people support the idea, that it's by the same John that is credited with writing the gospel. We're not even convinced, the scholars are not convinced that the gospel of John was written by John the apostle. We're talking, you know, 100 plus years after the fact, and someone writing in the name of John. The vocabulary, the whole point of the books, they don't match. So we're looking at someone that wrote in the name of John. What is very clear about what's going on is that this author was writing to a community that was in the midst of what can only be called a mutiny. I mean, some of the pillars of the church have left, and there's bad feelings, and there's all kinds of hubbub going on, and the author of John is writing going, hey, you know, keep it together. You guys need to, I mean, the world is a dangerous place. You guys have got to hang on with one another. You've committed to one another, so let's be faithful together. And I think that it's lost on us that fear was such, I mean, fear is a common fact today, but back in those days, I mean, if you associated with Jesus followers, there was very real possibility that you could have physical harm done to you and other things. So there was a genuine fear about being a Jesus follower, and this author keeps reminding the community that when you've got fear happening and encouraged, it takes away from the energy that you have to show love. It's like you've only got so much energy in the pie, and the more of that pie you commit to fear, the less you have for love. So the author is saying, you really have got to commit more to love. The whole letter is about reminding the community that God is love. That's what Jesus was on about. And that when you practice genuine love, there is less and less room for fear. And so this seemed to be a really good passage to talk about when we're talking about Halloween. So, 1 John.
There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, for fear has to do with punishment, and whoever fears has not reached perfection in love. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Let's pray. Loving Spirit, we're grateful for these words of wisdom that come to us from so long ago. May they not just be words on a page, but may they work their way into our hearts and minds so that none of us might leave this place unchanged. We gather as followers of Jesus. Amen. Well, it wasn't too many Halloweens ago that a man found himself walking through San Francisco, and he was working his way up one of those really steep hills when this truck came grinding by really slow up the hill, and it said on the side, "Bert and Bud's Vintage Coffins." And he thought, wow, you know, who would have thought you'd see something like that on Halloween day, you know? So he was thinking about that right when the truck took a sharp turn down a little narrow side street. And of course, it hit a bump, the doors opened in the back, a coffin came bouncing out and started rolling down the street. Just and it started careening off of cars and hitting poles. It almost hit a woman that was pushing a baby carriage and everything. And he was panicked. And so he looked around like, what can he do? What can he do to do something? And he saw that there was a pharmacy across the street. So he ran in and he ran up to the druggist and he said, "Hey, is there anything you have to help stop this coffin?" I've been waiting to use that one. Well, tomorrow is Halloween, and I wanted to be consistent, so I decided to do something that I didn't think other churches were doing today, which is celebrate the good things about Halloween. As you probably know, there are some genuinely frightened Christians out there. There are those who are they're campaigning to put an end to Halloween. A lot of churches now sponsor harvest festivals. You've seen those out there. Some churches are pressuring public schools to stop even talking about Halloween because they claim that it's a prime example of the creep of evil secular humanism, right? So you want to avoid that at all costs. There are a number of churches just right here in our neighborhood that are doing what's called now trunk or treat celebrations. They become really popular because that way you can collect all the kids in one place where they can be supervised by adults and you can alleviate everyone's fear of the children being abducted or poisoned, you know, by malicious neighbors, right? Okay, I just want to ask you this question then. What's the takeaway on that? You know, what we have essentially is churches promoting irrational fear. Of whom? Your neighbors, right? The takeaway message is that you've got to keep watchful adult eyes on your children at every moment during Halloween, because that one night of the year, our otherwise harmless, maybe even nice neighbors turn into psychotic child killers, right? Isn't that the message? We can't trust our own neighbors. A study done last year looked at police reports of child abductions and molestations across the United States. And guess what? October 31st, as opposed to the conventional wisdom out there, there's no bump at all, no spike on October 31st. It's the same as any other day of the year. Another ongoing study, I mean, they've got it. They've got the records, and they've made the study all the way back to the year 1958. They've been looking at newspaper articles that talk about children getting poisoned or hurt from Halloween candy. And guess what? From now all the way back to 1958, there's not a single incident, not one, of a child becoming seriously ill from poisoned candy collected while trick-or-treating. But the fear of neighbors overcome by Satan to harm children is standard operating procedure for Christian tracts. I got one under my windshield wiper that said I had to worry about it. It's what churches count on to scare people into being a part of the fellowship. So instead of engaging the community on very real threats, like drug addiction, like bullying in our schools, like the way our educational system is being strangled financially, some parents turn to the occult. Oh, let's do that. They turn to other strange things that they can go, it's not me, it's not anything, it's over there, it's the devil, you know, or someone else is doing evil. It's trying to distract from what the real problems are. And they cite the prevalence of Halloween parties and costumes as evidence that while Christianity is excluded from our schools, right? Oh, Christianity you can't teach, but Satanism you can, right? You hear that all the time. But the truth is not very dramatic. In fact, as usual, these ill-informed people are wrong. They don't know that Christianity actually took over Halloween, not the other way around. Christianity came in and took over what was called the Festival of Samhain. It was a harvest festival of the Druids 1,600 years ago. And the Celts and their Druid priests celebrated the last harvest of the year and the beginning of their new year on November 1st. So they offered animal and vegetable sacrifices over bonfires, and they offered well-wishing prayers to honor those who had died throughout the previous year. Now, the alleged human sacrifices that happened in these bone fires, legend. They are totally made up. The Druids were much more civilized than that. They left the burning of people at the stake to barbarians, like the Christians, who did so during, you know, crusades, inquisitions. The Celts believed that the souls of departed friends and family members spent New Year's Eve, October 31st, being judged as to what form they should take in their next life. Good souls entered into other human bodies at birth through the next year. Not so good souls, they ended up entering into animal bodies over the next year. On November 1st, New Year's Day, was the day they actually made the transition. They traveled to their new bodies. Now, Christian missionaries that arrived in what is now the UK, they glommed onto this pagan stuff right away, and they said, ooh, this is good. So they changed November 1st to All Saints' Day, right? Or All Hallows' Day. So that made October 31st All Hallows' Eve, right? So that's where we get Halloween. And it's a day to commemorate the lives of all the saints of the church who have no, you know, special calendar day of their own, and to recognize those saints within our own communities that have died in every congregation who have joined the church eternal over the last year. But, you know, it's really hard to keep a good pagan down. So the Celtic celebration, its meanings, its symbols, were newly energized by the Christian theology that was put over it. They continued to thrive in all kinds of new ways. So if you look at all of the what we would think is and what is credited with being the strange Halloween traditions, things like, you know, trick-or-treating around at neighbors' doors and, you know, the jack-o'-lantern or vigil lights and all of these things, they all of them developed after Christianity took over the holiday. So, in fact, the custom of trick-or-treating is thought to have originated not with the Irish Celts, but with a 9th century European custom called souling. And on November 2nd, it was All Souls' Day, Christians would walk from village to village collecting what were called soul cakes. And they were little cakes that had raisins in them, that had currants in them. And the idea was that if you'd had someone that had died that year, you would make a bunch of these and you would give them out to people as they came to your door. And for every soul cake you received, you would say a prayer for the person who had died. Because it was believed in those days that everybody had to spend some time in limbo, and that the more prayers that were said, even by strangers, would help spring you out of limbo into heaven sooner. So people would make up a bunch of these soul cakes and try to make that their practice for that day. So, but there's kind of this paradox going on. There's this reverse psychology at work here, because the super pious Christians who rail against the evilness of Halloween, it's like the more they rail against it, the more popular it becomes, right? And it's like with so many other things. In fact, since Christians started their most recent diatribe against the satanic influence of Halloween over the last generation or so, Halloween has become the second biggest holiday in the United States, a commercial holiday in the United States. And in fact, with this economy the way it is right now, it's estimated that this year, Halloween is going to generate over $6.8 billion in revenue for retailers this year. So what do you expect when one specific suggestion of a church, and this is, I kid you not, this is a suggestion by a local church to its members, to its parents, to band together to battle the satanic influence of Halloween. Are you ready, parents? This is what you need to do. They are to march into their local public school and tear down all the construction paper witches, ghosts, and goblins adorning the walls. Jack-o'-lanterns are to be smashed, orange and black streamers pulled down, and all is to be unceremoniously dumped in the principal's office with the declaration that the religion of Satanism has no place in public school curriculum. Are you willing to bet with me that the percentage of those parents who have their cars egged on Halloween is a lot higher than any other parent, or worse? I mean, there's this fundamentalist crusade against Halloween that has achieved exactly the opposite of what they wanted. You know, the early church tried to stamp out Samhain among the pagan Celts, and all they did was succeed in having it be re-energized. By calling for its ban, they've made it even stronger. And the totally ironic part of this is that churches try to make this devil's holiday, you know, something more wholesome by doing a harvest festival. But the harvest festival is what the Celts were doing in the first place. It's a totally pagan holiday, so it's really ironic. It's like, woo, let's go back to the totally pagan thing that was before even Christianity. And so, I just have to say, if they only knew, because they obviously don't. So, there are all these great Halloween traditions and symbols, and they all have been part of an understanding, trying to understand the whole idea of death, the whole idea of what it means to be a fragile mortal. We have in our Mexican culture, we have the Day of the Dead that does the same thing. It says, hey, you know, life is fragile. We don't have much time. We better be on about doing what we're going to do. And so that's what this holiday is more about. And if you ban Halloween, you're not going to ban that fear. You're not going to ban the idea of death or death itself. But as Christians, we can put it all in context when we look at its origins and figure that, hey, we can talk about this. Death is a reality. And we can celebrate those who have gone before us and not have it be a time of fear. You know, in a lot of churches, All Saints Day is a time when folks get together and you read a list from the congregation of all those who have died in the year before. Sometimes if we had a big bell in the bell tower, we'd bong every time we read someone's name. The ancient Celts had a ceremony that I think is beautiful. And they would go on this at this time, and the tradition was that they wanted to acknowledge the people who had joined the cloud of witnesses in the past year. So they would let their fires die down on October 31st, the last day of the year. Then they would all bring one ember from their hearth, bring it to the center of the village, and there they would all contribute one ember to the bonfire, which would build up, and then they'd have this bonfire that would go all night. And all night, they told stories about the people who had died the previous year. Remember when Uncle So-and-so did that? I remember when so-and-so was like, and they would have the greatest time remembering these people, honoring their memory. And they'd let the bonfire go down and down and down. And the first thing they would do as the sun started to come up is each of them would then take one of those embers from the bonfire, and they would nurture it all the way back to their own family hearth. And there they would use that ember that was a reminder to them of having spent that night remembering all of the people that had gone before to relight their family fire. On the first day of the year, they would relight the fire that would take them through the winter with all of those memories fresh in their mind. Isn't that a beautiful metaphor? It's just a beautiful thing that we've really lost because we've tried to keep the pagans down. And I think it's one of those things that we can think about reclaiming as a really important part of the human experience. There's this crusade against Halloween, and it's run by much holier than I am ever going to be Christians. And I think that what I'm left to do is with the author of 1 John to tell the people who are afraid to not give in to the fear. They claim that Halloween has come to embody all that is wrong with our culture, with our schools, with our children, with ourselves. And there's this creeping secular humanism that's coming in that is using Halloween to supposedly promote the existence of witches and devils and vampires and ghosts. But the author of 1 John spends the whole letter reminding the community that God is love. And that the more one practices genuine love, the more anxiety, the more uncertainty, and the more fear is out of space in our lives. There's no more room for it. In fact, John, the author of John, says, "There's no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. For fear has to do with punishment, and whoever fears has not reached perfection in love." I don't know a lot of Christians that have been perfected in love, but Wesley, who we claim to be followers of, said that our job as Methodists is to be going on to perfection. That's our job. And I've got to tell you that I think promoting fear is moving in the opposite direction. We are about going on to perfection, and that's about promoting love. Halloween didn't grow out of evil practices. It grew out of the rituals of Celts who were celebrating a new year, who were honoring and remembering their loved ones, and of medieval Christians who created rituals to help them honor those who had died in the previous year. So today, Halloween is only as evil as you want to make it. The rest of it is to be celebrated, to be honored, to help us remember the beauty of life, the witness that those who have gone before us have made in our lives. And so our stream of thought for today is, just say boo. And I don't mean about lousy jokes. I mean, we are called to follow our ancestors in the early church rather than contemporary Christians who are trying to scare people into believing. I mean, it's just like, it doesn't make sense to me to have, you know, that Jesus would have said, "Believe in me or else," kind of thing. You know, it's like, that doesn't fit with my understanding. And I don't think that scaring people into believing is a productive way of going about this thing called following Jesus. So if we approach this observance of Halloween as an opportunity to embrace all of life, even death, even fear, and see that that is who we are as human beings. Remembering that in 2 Timothy it's written, "For God did not give us a spirit of fear, but rather a spirit of power and of love and of sound mind." So my hope is that sound minds will prevail as we embrace and celebrate All Hallows Eve tomorrow night, and as we honor the saints who have gone before us. To close, I just want to suggest that on Wednesday afternoon had an amazing day. It was the last just gorgeous day of fall in Boston. And we walked around Walden Pond and all the leaves were changing. It was incredible. Then we went over to Concord to Sleepy Hollow Cemetery. Honest to goodness, yeah, there's a Sleepy Hollow Cemetery. Bob Heisel was saying after first service that, you know, he went on a field trip there when he was in elementary school because right up there on the ridge called Author's Ridge of Sleepy Hollow Cemetery, we got to go and visit Nathaniel Hawthorne, Henry David Thoreau, Louisa May Alcott, Ralph Waldo Emerson, all of them right there in a row. It was amazing to be there, because those are all people that in one way or another have touched me and have influenced me. And I know all of us have those people in our lives, whether they were authors or musicians or artists or thinkers that have influenced us, or people in our lives, parents, grandparents, friends, family members. So I want to just take a minute and ask everybody here, as a way of honoring those that have gone before us, to find someone that you did not come with and just introduce first name, just say, "Hi, I'm so-and-so," and then share with them someone that has changed your life, that's a saint for you, someone that maybe you don't go very long without thinking about because of the way they've influenced your life. Are you ready? 1 minute. Go.